it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the inaugural episode of 412 Kids. This is the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's brand new parenting podcast. I am your host. My name is Abby Mackey. I am a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette health writer. I'm also a registered nurse with most of my experience in pediatrics. I'm also the mother of two kids. So together, we're going to become better parents, and particularly better parents to Pittsburgh kids. And we're going to do that by hearing pro tips from guests. We're going to do that by hearing advice from expert guests, but we're also going to throw in a hefty dose of science along the way. So you not only know what to do, but why to do it. And as we thought about kicking this off, we thought there would be no better way than to recognize an exemplary parent, to steal their best practices. And as we are heading toward Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day to all the moms and mom figures out there, we first thought of Charlotte Hayward Wesley. If you're not familiar with Charlotte, she is the mother of two current Pittsburgh Steelers, both Cam Hayward and Connor Hayward, and she is the executive director of the Hayward House, which is the crystallization of all of Cam Hayward's do-gooding in the community, particularly for kids, and Charlotte has that same passion. So thank you, Charlotte, so much for joining us.
412 Kids!
All right, so Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us on our first ever episode of 412 Kids.
Wow, thank you for having me, Abby. Well, I appreciate it.
Well, so we wanted to take the time to look at an exemplary parent. We're leading up to Mother's Day. It had to be you. I think what's so great about it is so much of this is subjective, right? But you're unique in that we have some objective information of your success as a mom. And, you know, the newsiest part of that, of course, is Cam having been the recipient of the Walter Payton Man of the Year last season. I'm sure to you in ways that was no surprise. You've seen all that he's done closer than any of us have. But just tell us where you were and what you were doing when you got that news.
I was sitting two seats away from him. And he had said something to me prior to the event, like, "Mom, I just don't think I'm going to win this year. I just want you to know that, just, and it's okay." And I said, "No, it's always okay if you don't win, because everything you do and the foundation does, it's like, it's not for an award. Don't ever worry about that, but okay, if that's what you think." And so we were sitting there. And I just had this feeling, I was like, there's so many people from the Steelers staff here, and that's not like usual when we're there. There might be one or two, but like everybody was there. And I said, wow, they all came out for this. I hope they're not disappointed too. But when we saw the role of Cam and what he does with the foundation and in the community start, I just started to cry. And I looked over at him, and he started to tear up. We were just all just very emotional and just like, wow, this is pretty awesome.
That is so great. I'm so glad you were there. I didn't know that. So, okay. So on the list of mom moments, I would have to think that that's pretty high.
It is pretty high. There's been different things that each one of them have accomplished that have made me really happy. Seeing him live his dream playing in the NFL is one thing. But being recognized for something off the field that means so much to me and our family as far as giving back and doing for others, that really was a highlight. Yes. Yes. Seeing him get married was great. Seeing my first grandchild was great, you know. But yeah, seeing him receive that award, that means you're a great person and you're doing good things for other people. That tops it.
We always try so hard to instill things in our kids that are important to us, right? We always have these wheels turning, which is why we say crazy things and have mom brain, like, you know, turn the TV down, the toilet's running, right? All of these things we get made fun of for saying, because we're thinking of so many things at one time. And so I wonder, you know, when you were raising your kids, and it's four boys, right?
Yeah, there's little Craig, and he's my stepson, but I've known him since he was two. So he's mine. He's one of my other sons. Yes. And then I have a bonus son, Jager, from my husband. There's about eight kids. And my daughter that I adopted, Megan, that I raised too. But I have three biological boys.
Okay. You're more of a super mom than I even realized. So while you're raising these children, or co-raising these children, or whatever the situation is, you know, you're working so hard to put things into them that exemplify, you know, your own moral code, things that you think are important. So tell us a little bit about what you did for your own kids that maybe led to Cam having these priorities that he now has that are so recognized.
At our house in Georgia, our house was kind of like an open door. If there was ever a friend or family member that needed a place to stay when they were having a hard time, they always stayed at our house. We've had families live with us or somebody live with us for years. And so my kids always saw that I was doing for others, and it was kind of expected of them as well. When they were younger, on Thanksgiving and Christmas for a couple of years, I traveled a lot. So I had a lot of toiletries from the hotels, and I would collect them, and we would make cookies and then put them in Ziploc bags. And on Thanksgiving or Christmas, we would go out that year and take them to the homeless people, but we collect coats and blankets and pillows too from their schools. They would be like, well, we want to play with our gifts. Or, you know, and I'm like, no, there's people that are out on the streets that we're going to go do something for them first. And so we go into the streets of Atlanta, and we live about 30 minutes outside of Atlanta. So we drive downtown, and at first they were scared. And I was like, oh no, you can't be scared. These people sleep here. We're going to get out and we're going to give them something to make them happy. So they get out and we'd all start distributing, and the people would be just so gracious and say thank you because they didn't make it into the shelter. That's, I think, when they saw that this isn't just mom letting people live with us, you know, during hard times, but we really have to give back because we've been blessed.
That's wonderful. And, you know, I think it's so hard. Probably even then, especially now, just the sort of materialism and things that exist. I feel like as moms, we kind of have to oppose that as much as we can. Was that part of what was in your head?
In our house, we kind of like, we didn't have like excessive toys. I'm just kind of old school. I mean, they love sports. We played outside all the time. They played video games. Cam and Corey did. Connor didn't. But not excessively. And then phones weren't around until like Cameron was like in high school. So I didn't have to fight that battle as much. And my younger boys, I didn't let them get a phone until eighth grade. And I think Corey was ninth grade. I'm a stickler for rules and that how we run our house. I always had a curfew of 12 o'clock. And they're like, Mom, I'm like, there's nothing out there for you after 12 o'clock. There's just nothing out there for you. And when they got to college, it's so funny because a lot of them would say, we get tired at 12 o'clock. We try to hang out. But they remembered what I would say. And, you know, my daughter Megan would say, you know, I just wanted to like come back home. It's like shortly after 12 o'clock. There are times I stayed out later. But and when they come home, they kind of respect my rules, too, when they're visiting. Because I was like, I don't want to hear the alarm go off. I don't want to hear the doors beep and you have to, and they still do that. I'm like, you guys are adults. You don't have to come home at 12 o'clock anymore when you're back in Georgia. But they kind of respect the rules still.
Well, that's fantastic because I think, you know, as moms, sometimes we don't realize or we're worried that these lessons that we're trying to instill aren't sticking or won't make a difference. But you're even seeing that with them as adults. So that's fantastic. Not only, Charlotte, did you have all of these children that you were raising? But of course, if the last name of Hayward sounds a little more familiar than just two current Steelers, that's because the father of those two current Steelers was Craig Ironhead Hayward, who was a star Pitt football player, played for a few teams across the NFL. and passed away at age 39.
A brain tumor called a chordoma that 1 in 10 million people get.
So not only were you raising these children as a single mom, which is hard enough on its own, but you have this added texture to that situation of having to navigate grief for them, with them, for yourself. So tell us a little bit about rallying yourself to be a single mom, and also maybe just a little bit about how you navigated that grief portion, because so unfortunately, there are many families like yours.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. Their dad had a huge personality. Anybody that knew their father, Ironhead, had a huge personality. I didn't call him Ironhead, but that's what he was known as. And my real father died when I was 10 years old. I always wondered, you know, wow, my dad was taken from me and I was close to my dad. I was a tomboy and my dad played sports and it was a tragic accident how my dad died. But as I've gotten older and I look back, it helped me because I had to learn how to grieve as a child. And it was helpful for my boys because I knew what they were going through. And my daughter Megan, her mom died when she was 10 months old. And I had another young lady that I helped raise and her mom died when she was 5 months old. So God has put people in my life that, or children in my life that have lost a parent. And I always try to talk about good memories and think about the positive, because there are kids that have parents that live around the corner from them and they have no relationship with them. And how hard that must be to know that you have a parent that you have no relationship with that lives nearby you or is alive and, you know, you don't have a relationship with them. We always just tried to focus on the memories and the good times that we had, because Craig's condition progressively got worse after he had a stroke. It gave me time to prepare more just doing everything by myself, because we would take turns taking them to school and things like that, even after his cancer diagnosis. But after his stroke, he wasn't able to drive and things like that. So I had about 2 years of doing things just basically myself. And I relied heavily on my village, their coaches, my friends, everybody just helped and pitched in.
I spoke to Tyler Boyd's mom recently. I did a They Care profile on her, which is a feature we have within the health and wellness section. When I spoke to Tyler for that story, he talked about how, you know, just that idea that floats around that it's difficult for women to raise men. And then, of course, he went on to say, but she did such a fantastic job and this is how she did it and all of these things. I wonder if you think there's anything to that idea that it's difficult for women to raise men? And if you did anything intentionally to sort of recognize, okay, I'm a woman, I'm raising these males, how do I make sure they're exposed to everything that they would have been if their dad were here?
I think I'm a boy mom.
I love that. I am also a boy mom.
I can say there are things that I know I went to friends and said, you know, about them going through hormonal changes. Like, we would have brief conversations about sex education, but if they had questions, I had male friends for them to talk to, teaching them how to shave. But as far as I think raising males, it wasn't hard. I'm going to teach them the same things that I would teach a young woman, especially I wanted them to respect women and I wanted them to respect themselves. And I think because we were such a competitive family, I was an athlete, my husband was an athlete. I played basketball with him. I played football. I'd be dressed in a suit and Connor would meet me at the door and say, Mom, I need you to throw passes to me. I'm like, Connor, I have to change. I played sports, so I understood the sports factor and competition. So I don't think it was hard for me to raise boys. No. I think I was more strict than their dad. They're like, Mom, we never got in trouble because, like, you would be crazy. Well, Connor was my test and he's the sweetest thing in the world. He's the sweetest thing in the world, but he was the youngest one who always had a little bit of a mouth. But when he was little, I made him dress up in a suit because he kept talking in class. And I said, well, if you want to be the class clown after you get done with your work and, you know, disrupt the class, then you're going to wear a suit to school every day until you get it. And so he wore a suit. And I said, because that way you'd look at yourself and you'll say, why do I have the suit on? Because I can't be quiet.
I love that. And I need a little Charlotte in me, because I feel like I'm not intimidating enough to my boys. I'm out there playing football and basketball and all of those things, but
yeah,
I'm not sure they fear me, and I have to get some of that in my life.
Well, I didn't want them to fear me. I just, when Corey told me that, I was like, you fear me? He's like, yeah, Mom, like, we never wanted to get in trouble. And I think that you didn't want to disappoint me too. Oh yeah. Then there was the time Connor slammed the door. Like, you don't slam doors in my house. You can have feelings. You can express yourself, but you're not going to slam doors. He slammed the door. He had a basketball tournament. I said, well, guess what? You're going to go to your tournament and you're not going to play. And you're going to sit on the bench and your coach is going to ask, well, why can't Connor play? And I say, because he slammed my door. He doesn't slam doors in my house. And so he never slammed the door again. But I guess, you know, you have to stick to your principles. And yeah, I didn't waver.
Well, and I think an important parenting method there is that even sort of the smaller infractions maybe got big consequences because they were important to you.
I think if you don't nip those in the bud, then they become bigger. And I think I saw things where we live that the kids kind of ran the house. And I'm like, but that's not how it's supposed to be. They have to respect the home. They have to help clean up. They have to take ownership, because they're going to have a home one day. There was a lot of spoiled kids where we lived, and that was not going to happen. You get rewarded, but you have to be a good kid. You don't have to be perfect. Nobody's perfect, you know, and you have to give back. Cameron was the king of giving back when he was little.
What about that? What did he do even when he was little?
At Christmas time, you know, we always got gifts for their teachers. Cameron got a gift for his teacher, Mr. Carl, the custodian, the music teacher, the art teacher, the lunch aides. Cameron wanted to get a gift for everybody that he encountered as somebody at school. So that went on all through elementary school. So he would get like 10 gifts for Christmas to take to school. So his heart was big when he was young.
Obviously carried through too. You know, back to teaching your children to really respect your home. For your kids who are married or living with somebody, have you seen that pay dividends at all? Do you see them, you know, getting positive responses from their wives, you know, that they clean up well or do the laundry, anything like that?
Cameron is a little messy. He's still a little messy, but he does respect his home and he respects his wife. And he loves her with all of his heart. He would never disrespect her. She is the apple of his eye. And that's what I've wanted, for them to respect their spouse and other people. Connor is my extremely neat one, like me. He wants his house clean. He's a lot like me. He's my lab, though. He just loves people. Anybody can stay at his house, just like how everybody stayed at our house. Everybody stays at Connor's house. And he's always there for all of his friends and his girlfriend.
So wonderful to see all of that being reflected back to you, I'm sure, all of these things that you tried to teach them. Yes. So, okay, another NFL mom that we have to talk about. This is number three in the episode so far. It's okay. Donna Kelce, right? People can't get enough of Donna Kelce and her two sons and Taylor Swift at this point. Donna has done these interviews, and one of them had to do with feeding her sons. Right? She had these great big athletic sons that when they were teenagers, she said, I believe that each of them could finish a rotisserie chicken for dinner. And so I was wondering if there are any great stories coming out of the Hayward house for how you fed all of these big athletic children.
It was like 4 gallons of milk a week. I just would make big pans of everything. I mean, they ate a ton of food. And I mean, but they ate healthy. So it was fruit. I'd cut up, you know, fruit, or I'd say get an apple if we're running out somewhere. We had always had good snacks in the car, healthy snacks for them. But I mean, I stayed at Costco all the time. But it's weird now because I still make large portions. I don't know how to cook small. I don't know how to do it. But you don't know when you're going through it. You're just like going through the motions of cooking and taking care of them. Like, I wash clothes every day because they all had different sports, and Megan had track and softball and basketball. Connor had football and baseball and basketball. Corey had football and basketball, and Cameron had football and basketball. So I was always washing clothes, and now I still wash clothes every single day. It's like therapy for me. It doesn't end. It just changes a little bit. Enjoy it. How many children do you have?
I have two. Our older one is 10. Our younger one is 5. Okay. And I feel like now nothing compared to your house at all. But I feel like from the second I had two boys, everyone said, oh, are they eating you out of house and home? And for a long time, I said no. You know, for a long time, I felt like it was a fairly normal. I didn't even necessarily feel like I was buying that many more groceries. But in the past year, we have hit that imaginary line.
Okay.
And it just eats all the time. And we're like you. You know, we're a little old school. Get outside and play. You know, we're not going to sit and play video games at night. We're going to go play football at the, you know, playground or whatever it is. So we get them moving a lot and things like that. But it is now the case that we are just going through massive amounts of food. So that's part of why that Donna Kelsey anecdote really hit home with me. You said you made big pans of food. So what were your specialties?
I made a lot of casseroles. That was huge because then I could just like get the pasta in there, veggies, protein, and it would be something that could be reheated very easily. A lot of pastas, just something that when we would get home from practice or if one was home from practice while I was gone with another one that they could reheat really easy. So pasta was a big thing, all different types. It might be a seafood pasta, it might be spaghetti, it might be lasagna, it might be lots of pastas and lots of just different casseroles. I try to make something different. I make this thing called Mexican pizza pie. Cameron still wants me to make that.
So but is this actually like a pizza or more of like a casserole?
It's a casserole, but then on top you do a layer of the thin crust pizza, like Pillsbury, but you put that on top of everything. But inside it's just like, what was in the Mexican? Gosh, haven't made it in so long, but it's chicken and black beans. And so it's like a taco shell inside. I mean, what you stuff in a taco, you know what I mean? You could do beef.
Like cheese too, sort of holding cheese. It together.
Yeah. And then there's a thin layer of the pizza dough on top and then cheese on top of that.
Okay, yeah. I hope lots of people listening now make this dish because it sounds so good. And you're totally right. Exactly how you use these foods, I think, applies to so many families, right? We have all the sports practices and the clubs and the activities and things like that. You have to have ways to sort of still eat healthy, hopefully, even while you're going in and out of your house like that. So speaking of the actual Hayward House, we'll now talk about the Hayward House, the organization. Charlotte is the executive director of the Hayward House, which is sort of the culmination, it seems like, of all the things that Cameron was trying to do, but put all in one spot. And clearly you have a passion for this too. Tell us a little bit about when and why you and Cam got together and said, we're going to do this together.
Well, when Cam first got into the league, I really wanted him to become acclimated to being a professional athlete. There's a lot of pressure on you and just the speed of the game, the outside pressures now with social media. So he took a couple of years, but even when he first started with the Steelers, every Tuesday when they're on their day off, Cameron was in the community doing something. So he did something for the first couple of years just for the Steelers, always. He was trying to be involved in the community as much as possible. And then around 2015, so he had been in league about 4 years, we decided to start the foundation so that we could do things that were close to our heart and give back. And so we started the foundation, but we didn't think it was going to grow. We really thought it was going to stay small and that we would just do small things like take kids shopping or coat drives. But it's kind of grown to something where we're making more of an impact on kids. And that's been a true blessing.
Obviously, there are so many merits to helping kids. But what was the decision-making process to orient it all toward kids? Because it seems like, you know, if we look back to the projects you did with them when they were younger and things like that, those were a lot of the time angled at adults. So why kids in this case?
Kids are our future. And I feel like kids are going through so much. Life is moving so fast for them that there are so many kids that get left out, or kids are just expected to grow up so much faster than we did. just with social media and telephones and, you know, everybody has a cell phone. I just feel like I want to slow things down for kids and let them be children. If a child knows that they matter, then they have something within them that will carry them through a lot of things. I wanted my kids to always know that they were worthy, that they mattered, that their opinions mattered, that their thoughts mattered, that their vision mattered. There are so many kids that don't have that. I feel like anytime we can, I want to help a young person know that.
Well, that does it for our conversation with Charlotte Hayward Wesley. Thank you so much to her for joining us. What a way to end it, and what a way to get us thinking about Mother's Day in the right way as we head toward this weekend. But before you go, each episode of 412 Kids is going to have a final segment that we will call 412 for You. And so in this last little part, we're going to talk about nuggets of information that might just be food for thought. They might be something funny. They might be events coming up for the weekend. It might be a pediatrics or parenting related headline that has come up during the week. So let's go. Did you know that about 2 years ago, the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh started a program where they give away memberships to teenagers? They just announced that in that two-year period, they have given away 19,100 teenager memberships. So we're talking about over 19,000 kids who had exposure to the museums that otherwise maybe wouldn't have. So if you have a teenager and they don't have this type of membership, maybe they should. All they have to do is be 13 through 18 years old and a resident of Pennsylvania. The other cool thing is that the museums provide opportunities for these teens to get together through special teenage programming, where it's a social opportunity for kids who are interested in science or math or art to get together and be with other kids just like them. Here's your quirky fact. We might be doing this Mother's Day thing all wrong. According to new data from agecalculator.com, November is the most common conception month in the state of Pennsylvania. TMI? I don't know. That's up to you. Also, May is actually the least common conception month in the state of Pennsylvania. So maybe Mother's Day, Father's Day, maybe they should be in November or August when these babies are born. Last thing, as we look forward toward the weekend, if you're looking for something to do on Saturday, May 11th, that is the next Open Streets Pittsburgh. So this is the downtown to Southside route. If you bring your kids, it might be a good time to talk about how this is probably the only time you should be walking down the middle of the street. But you can do more than walk. You can skate, you can ride your bike, you can dance. There'll be music along the way. Local businesses will be involved. So if you're interested in some more information about that, go to openstreetspgh.org/route. And best of all, it's free. Friends, thanks so much for joining us. I have been your host, Abby Mackey. Our editor is Polly Higgins. Our producer is Jacob Comer. Just for this first episode, we want to say some thank yous to people around the newsroom who have supported us. Our executive editor, Stan Wisnowski, our managing editor, Teresa Lindemann, thanks so much for giving us the green light and the vote of confidence to get this going. Also, thanks to Matt Rosenberg, Laura Schneiderman, James Hilston, probably some people that I'm missing, but we've asked a lot of questions and we've gotten a lot of very patient answers from all of these people. So from all of us here at the Post-Gazette, it is our privilege to be with you on this journey, with you and your 412 kids. Happy Mother's Day.